work off some of his anger on a long ride. Fanry wondered what it would be like when they spoke again. For now, all that mattered was that Minister Orth was calm, Merrit Kahl had relaxed again, and her hair had not been revealed too soon. The crown jeweler held out the smallest box yet.
"Try this, Your Serene Highness."
Opening the lid, Fanry saw a delicate circlet beaded with tiny gemstones that would catch the light and sparkle in a dozen different shades. She laid it on her head and looked at herself in the mirror, as the queen she would soon be.
"Oh, it's perfect," she said. "This is the one."
Qui-Gon returned from Pygel with Captain Darren on one of the royal ships. Obi-Wan would fly back later after helping Pax Marifer repair the facet. Given what had happened to Rahara Wick, they owed the man all the assistance they could manage. The trip back might have provided an opportunity to hear whether all the royal troops shared Darren's thought about the Blackguards and the opposition. Instead, Qui-Gon was treated to several rounds of marching songs in varying degrees of cheerful obscenity. He returned to the palace none the wiser. Rahara Wick's fate troubled him deeply. She'd taken a risk he hadn't asked her to take, one she'd faced with a full understanding of the dangers involved. He knew he wasn't directly responsible for her fate. Yet she would never have been anywhere near the Zerka facility if he hadn't strong-armed the Merrick's crew into assisting with his mission. Qui-Gon paused in the hall leading to his chamber in the palace. His spirit was in turmoil. He needed to still it through a deeper level of meditation. For this, he needed solitude. He wound his way through the palace until he found a lesser-used area, and within it, the stairway to a tower. The steps had been carved out of rock long ago, their edges worn soft and rounded by centuries of feet. Qui-Gon had to duck most of the way. Certainly it seemed as if very few people came to this part of the palace. Maybe this would offer him an hour of silence and peace. Instead, when he reached the top terrace and stepped into the open air, he found Rael Averroes standing there. Rael's arms were crossed against his chest, and he was looking across the pathway that led to the palace, lined by heavy ancient trees. When he glanced over, he made a sound that might have been a scoff or a laugh.
"Figures. I try to get away from it all, and you follow me anyhow."
Qui-Gon felt much the same. Saying so would get them nowhere. Instead, he walked out onto the terrace, taking a good look around at the splendor of their surroundings.
"You must have enjoyed spending 8 years in a place as beautiful as this."
Rael shrugged.
"Never gave a damn about this kind of stuff."
Which was true.
"That's why you were able to handle this assignment when many other Jedi couldn't have." "The Jedi live in the fanciest building on the fanciest planet in the galaxy. I imagine most of them could deal with Pygel just fine."
Rael rested his elbows on the stone wall that ringed the top of the tower.
"The Council sent me here because they knew how I felt about Nim. They knew I'd never get over it unless I got to do right by some other kid. But I told them not to give me another Padawan. Not then, not ever. So they sent me here to bring up Fanry."
Qui-Gon asked, "Has it helped?"
"Some. But it doesn't fix it. Nothing's ever gonna fix it."
Pulling back from the wall, Rael shook himself out of his contemplative mood.
"What are you doing up here?"
"Searching for solitude and quiet."
"We've gotten pretty good at sabotaging each other. At least you've gotten good at sabotaging me. Don't know that I'll get any chances for payback." "Do you want payback?"
Qui-Gon wondered just how far Rael had deviated from Jedi teachings.
"Don't know. What I do know is that I'm in a bad mood, and if I can't meditate it away, I'm gonna have to work it out."
Rael took the hilt of his lightsaber in his hand.
"Wanna spar?"
Since it looked like Qui-Gon wasn't going to get a chance to meditate either,
Lots.
They ignited their lightsabers at the same moment. Rael's blue, Qui-Gon's green. The two Jedi circled each other, taking stock. They'd sparred against each other many times, but not since Rael was a young man and Qui-Gon no more than a boy. Past experience might not apply. Rael swung first, going low. Qui-Gon parried and followed through on the movement, turning so that he was now closer to the wall.
"So these days you make sure to cover your ass,"
Rael said, shifting his weight from foot to foot.
"Used to be you threw yourself into a fight like you meant it."
"Dooku taught us caution," Qui-Gon said. "Well, he tried to."
That made Rael laugh. "First he taught us to trust our instincts. So that's what I do."
He moved forward at such speed, Qui-Gon scarcely had time to bring his lightsaber up to block. The electric hum of their weapons turned to the crash of static as their blades collided. One push backward and Qui-Gon had driven Rael out again.
"Dooku also taught us about the ancient mystics."
How much Qui-Gon would give to know his old master's thoughts about this situation?
"But only after you introduced me to the prophecies."
"Because they were a hell of a lot more interesting than anything else you could learn out of books," Rael said. "Still, I never took that stuff literally."
Qui-Gon raised an eyebrow.
"Dooku believed in them once, and eventually did again."
At the last word, he went on the attack. Qui-Gon swung his blade, sharp, short moves that forced Rael back several steps, until they stood together at the center of the terrace. But Rael remained undaunted.
"Dooku left the Jedi. You've got to admit, it doesn't sound like he's putting his full faith in the Jedi teachings anymore. Do you still have faith?"
Qui-Gon asked, taking a step forward. Their lightsabers weren't touching, but were so close, sparks crackled between them.
"That's all that matters here."
"Let's say I do," Rael answered. "Let's say I believe that someday there's going to be perfect balance in the Force, thanks to some kind of chosen one. Did you ever really think about what that would mean, Qui-Gon? It would mean the darkness would be just as strong as the light. So it doesn't matter what we do, because in the end, hey, it's a tie. It doesn't matter which side we choose."
Qui-Gon straightened and deactivated his blade. Rael took a step back, lowering his lightsaber but keeping it on.
"It matters,"
Qui-Gon said quietly.
"It matters which side we choose. Even if there will never be more light than darkness. Even if there can be no more joy in the galaxy than there is pain. For every action we undertake, for every word we speak, for every life we touch, it matters. I don't turn toward the light because it means someday I'll win some sort of cosmic game. I turn toward it because it is the light."
Rael turned off his lightsaber then, but the contest wasn't completely over.
"You've made mistakes, Qui-Gon. You've touched darkness."
"Yes, I have. No doubt I will again. This isn't a choice we make once and walk away from. It's the work of a lifetime."
Qui-Gon headed for the door. Strangely, despite everything, he had found a greater sense of peace.
"Take up that work again, Rael. Let yourself be guided by the Force."
"I'm not your Padawan," Rael replied. "So save it."
Qui-Gon saved it. He went downstairs wondering when or if his old friend would again be guided by his principles rather than his shame. In the early evening on Pygel's moon, the sky took on a vivid shade of pink. Pygel hung enormous and golden in the sky, giving the scene a kind of beauty it didn't deserve. Obi-Wan knelt in the muck that had been a Zerka compound and then a battleground. Next to him was the Facet, and in its cockpit sat Pax Marifer, who wanted to test the repairs.
"All right, what do you see when I do this?"
Pax asked, to the sound of a flipped switch. "The wing curvature increases the degree of its arc," Obi-Wan said, reaching toward a panel by the wing.
"Splendid! And what about this?"
"Ow!" Obi-Wan pulled back his hand. After sucking on his singed finger for a second, he answered,
"The anti-grav units warm up. Literally."
"Well, that's good, then. That's good."
Pack said the words absently, as though he didn't wholly remember where he was.
"I suppose there's no reason for me to stick around, then."
They'd double, triple, and quadruple-checked the minor repairs the facet had needed. Obi-Wan strongly suspected Pax was putting off his departure out of the irrational hope that Rahara Wick would suddenly appear and explain where she'd been. But night was falling, and more than one armed group was running amok on this moon. They both needed to leave.
"Pax?" he asked. "If it would help, you could head back to the Merricks and bring it up. That way I could pilot the facet into its hold."
"Oh, yes. Of course. Very logical."
Slowly, as though his muscles were sore, Pax climbed from the facet cockpit and wandered into the woods. How long would it be before he could bring himself to take off? A while, Obi-Wan thought. So he didn't climb into the facet himself right away. His comm link buzzed. He took it up and said,
"Kenobi here."
"Padawan Kenobi."
It was Mace Windu's voice.
"Is this an opportune time to speak?"
The Jedi Council had made its decision. Chapter 32. What action could not do, diplomacy might accomplish. Or, failing that, money.
"Supervisor call,"
Qui-Gon said, taking a seat in her luxurious office.
"Thank you for agreeing to see me on such short notice, and at such a late hour."
"I'd been hoping to speak with you too."
Meret Kahl folded her hands together on her desk. Through the enormous window behind her, he could see the palace silhouetted by the last fading light of sundown.
"Besides, we're all putting in long hours preparing for the coronation. Zerka's sponsoring numerous fairs and activities in honor of the future queen."
"A sector supervisor helps organize public events,"
Qui-Gon asked mildly, accepting a small cup of tea from a little LEP servant droid.
"That seems, well, beneath your station."
Corporate types were always protective of their status, and Meret Kahl was no exception. She was quick to explain.
"I prefer to think of it as an investment in Zerka's future, both here on Pygel and in regard to the new hyperspace corridor. Everything we can do to ensure a smooth transfer of power is, in the end, as much of a benefit to this company as it is to Her Serene Highness."
Qui-Gon nodded as though this were any other pleasant conversation over tea.
"Of course, it doesn't look like there's going to be a ceremony."
Kahl's smile stiffened but didn't fade.
"I feel sure the Republic will find someone or other to play the part. Please know, Master Jin, that I don't mean to cast any aspersion on your religious beliefs. But dreams foretelling the future? Well, that's not how Zerka Corporation makes decisions. I've been hoping to talk to you to see if anything might persuade you to reconsider the basis for your actions."
In other words, she hoped he might take a bribe. Probably Meret Kahl had more sense than to offer him money, but other forms of bait might be dangled. Qui-Gon wondered whether any Jedi had ever bitten. Not many of them, certainly, but one or two? Perhaps especially since Kahl was smiling at him brightly in a way that suggested she felt optimistic.
"My decision is final. And I doubt the Republic will be sending anyone else to sign the governance treaty, not without significant changes."
Although Qui-Gon wasn't sure how quickly the Jedi Council would react, he knew Yoda had listened to his concerns and taken them seriously. For all Yoda's lectures about how the Jedi should not rule, he had a funny way of convincing Chancellor Kaj to listen. action would be taken. No more people would be enslaved on Pygel. But that wasn't what Qui-Gon had come here to negotiate.
Let's put political matters behind us, he said, setting down his cup. Yesterday on Pygel's moon, a person Zerka formerly held as sentient property was retaken into custody.
Not formally.
Qui-Gon frowned. I beg your pardon.
Those who escaped, rather than legally purchasing their freedom or having it purchased for them, are not formally owned by Zerka, said Kahl. They're still owned by Zerka. Our corporate charters specify this in great detail, and of course, any planet that does business with us must agree to operate in accordance with the charter. That includes Pygel.
Every word of this was odious to Qui-Gon, but he remained calm. He was here to accomplish one task and one task only.
Then, as you would have it, a woman owned by Zerka was taken back into custody after several years at large. I wish to negotiate for or purchase her freedom.
Kahl blinked. Whatever she'd been expecting him to say, it wasn't that.
A Jedi wishes to buy a slave. My, how novel.
In order to free her,
Qui-Gon emphasized. Merritt Kahl pursed her lips.
Would you be willing to consider a price other than money? Say your cooperation in the treaty ceremony? Agreeing to represent the Republic?
The automatic answer stilled in his throat. Could he use this position to bargain for meaningful changes, the amendment of the treaty, or even banning slavery on Pygel? Could he not only recover Ahara Wick, but also benefit the entire planet?
Probably not.
Qui-Gon's heart sank as he realized how unlikely the Jedi Council was to back him up on this. It was an overreach of his power as a representative, and he knew it. Besides that, his vision remained vivid. Qui-Gon had seen bloodshed and mayhem at the treaty ceremony. He knew, as absolutely as though he'd already lived through it, that he could not allow the ceremony to occur. Not even to save his own life.
That's not possible, he said. However, I'm prepared to offer a considerable amount of money. Or perhaps offer advice on how certain political situations might change when Chancellor Kaj leaves office.
Merritt Kahl's eyes lit up, and for a moment Qui-Gon thought it might be that easy. His opinions weren't based on any confidential information. Many people assumed that the Jedi must have inside knowledge of government workings, which was only partially true. Qui-Gon had no more idea than anyone else in the galaxy about what the other candidates like Elysiar or Valora might do in office. He would opine at length, though, if it freed Rahara Wick. Then Kahl's expression hardened.
I'm afraid I can't do that. Honestly, I'm not sure there's any bargain we could have struck. When a slave escapes, it's important to show the others the futility of that action. Allowing such a person to be purchased and freed immediately, well, it could create unrest, raise false hopes. I'm sure you understand what I mean.
You mean, Qui-Gon said, that there's nothing I can do to change your mind.
With a broad smile, Kahl said,
absolutely nothing.
Wick, Rahara.
The cam droid took images of her from every angle as she stood shivering in the processing chamber. Meanwhile, the RQ protocol droid shuffled around her, reciting the facts out loud.
Born in Zerka 29 years prior to the Hosnian Prime Factory Complex. Reported missing 15 years, 2 months, and 2 days prior. Recovered today at approximately...
I wasn't born to Zerka, Rahara said.
Her voice was almost drowned out by the hissing of steam vents and the constant clanking of droids and prisoner footsteps on the metal grid floors.
I was born to parents. Human parents. Don't guess you could tell me who they were?
Sometimes she believed she remembered them. Most of the time she knew better. The RQ unit paused.
The requested records are irrelevant.
You know, I have a friend who was raised by protocol droids.
Could Rahara connect with this thing? She'd actually learned how to get through to Pax from time to time. Maybe she could put that experience to good use.
By 3PO units, not RQs, but all protocol droids must have a lot in common, right?
We have protocol in common.
Right. Exactly. Well, my friend Pax, he said that protocol droids have a well-developed moral sense. Better than most humans, even.
Her voice shook as she spoke Pax's name. Half the time he'd driven her so crazy, she wanted to toss him out of the nearest airlock. But the other half, Rahara swallowed hard. If she thought about Pax right now, she'd break down, and she was close enough to that already.
He said that if protocol droids made the rules, the galaxy would make a lot more sense.
The RQ model pivoted at its waist to study her more closely.
This is fact.
Mostly she was just stalling. Rahara could see the intake doors 3 meters away and knew she'd be marched through them, cuffed and penned, then put to work here while awaiting reassignment. If she could trust her memories of others who had been recaptured, her next assignment wasn't going to be anything cushy. Zerka would pack her off to the spice mines of Kessel, or bitterly cold construction work on Stygian Prime. There would be no mercy for her.
So, as a protocol droid, maybe you can tell me something.
Rahara wiped steam-damp hair away from her face. The scratchy Zerka coverall clung to her skin as if trying to asphyxiate her.
Why does Zerka keep people, when droids can do the work better and last longer and are cheaper? Why? What's the point?
The RQ unit cocked its head.
Zerka Corporation enslaves sentient beings because it can.
Then it sent her through to finish processing. Qui-Gon walked from Zerka headquarters back toward the palace. Hovering candle droids illuminated the path, as well as some other areas around the grounds. At first, he took little note of them. The palace was always surrounded by illumination, and he was preoccupied with the idea of freeing Rahara Wick. If Merrit Kahl refused to either sell or barter for her, maybe he should adopt a less legal approach. An individual starfighter or two might be able to slip through the Leverage's defenses if a distraction could be created. But as he considered possible distractions, set a derelict craft to self-destruct, his attention was gradually drawn back to the present. In the rapidly darkening night, it was becoming apparent that the area around the palace was brighter than usual. Significantly brighter. Stepping from the tree-lined path onto the broad lawn gave him a view of sentry guards and worker droids hard at work around an entertainment pavilion, the broad balcony over the sea, and especially the celestial chalice. When Qui-Gon walked through the palace door, he was greeted with a similar scene. Fresh flowers and brilliant colors had been heaped into pottery jugs set upon every flat surface. Two droids worked together to wax the floor of the great hallway, one rolling about to spread the wax, the other following behind to buff. One of the cooks was hurrying toward the kitchen, speaking into his comlink.
No, 60 fruit displays won't be enough. We need at least 80. Yes, I know about the short notice, but there's nothing to be done. Jedi Jin,
Minister Orth appeared, straightening her tan cloak.
Well, you don't lack courage, I'll grant you that.
Qui-Gon elected not to take that conversational bait.
Where are you going?
To review the seating charts. Don't worry, I don't hold grudges. You'll have a front row view.
She gave him a thin smile before continuing on her way.
The coronation, he thought. The treaty. They can't be going ahead with it, can they?
He hurried toward their quarters. Surely there was some message from the Jedi Council about this. Had Rael contacted them to request another representative? Had they been weak-willed enough to do it? Or had a new version of the Constitution and treaty been drafted, setting everything to rights?
Obi-Wan?
Qui-Gon called as he walked through the entrance into their shared living area.
Are you here?
Yes, Master.
Obi-Wan appeared in the doorway to his bedroom. He both looked and sounded subdued.
I am.
What the blazes is going on around here?
Qui-Gon shrugged off his robe.
They're preparing for the treaty ceremony, Obi-Wan said. The coronation, the constitution, all of it.
How precisely do they intend to go ahead with us?
Darker suspicions entered his mind.
Has Zurka convinced them they don't need the Republic at all?
Obi-Wan shook his head.
No, Master. Nothing like that.
He swallowed hard.
The Jedi Council. The Council has named me the rightful representative of the Republic for the purposes of the ceremony.
A Padawan representing the entire Republic? Even a Padawan as strong as Obi-Wan.
It made no sense.
Rael contacted them and this was their answer.
I contacted them.
Obi-Wan straightened up.
You and Master Avaros had reached an impasse. Neither of you was willing to seek the Council's advice, so I had to do it. I never thought this is what they'd decide, but it's what they've asked me to do.
The sense of abandonment, of betrayal, closed around Qui-Gon like a fist. Obi-Wan had done this? It took him several silent moments to come up with any words.
You're willing to sign a treaty and ratify a constitution that will seal both slavery and Zurka Corporation in place on this planet forever?
No, Master.
Obi-Wan shook his head so quickly that in less dire circumstances, it would have been comical.
The Senate Committee drafted a clause saying that essentially, the treaty's terms are only temporary. Really, it's just a way to open the hyperspace corridor and get the Democratic Assembly into office. Then Pygel has to offer a new constitution and the new treaty to the Republic within one local year. Of course, the Senate has strongly indicated the changes they expect to see.
Which they won't,
Qui-Gon said.
Are they naive enough to think that Zurka won't bribe every newly elected official? Are you?
The lone advantage of leaving authority in the hands of a monarchy is that you only have to convince one person to create positive change.
Now, there will be hundreds with scraps of authority, many of whom will already be financially tied to Zurka.
Obi-Wan's expression shifted from shamefaced to stubborn.
You always claim to have faith in democratic institutions. You praised them only a few days ago. Is it so different here on Pygel?
Maybe not, but maybe it is.
Qui-Gon sank down heavily on the nearest chair. The images from his dream flooded into his mind, and he had to envision Obi-Wan amid the conflict and the bloodshed, fighting for his life.
None of this changes the vision I've seen of the future. But of course you don't believe in the vision. You don't believe in prophecy.
I believe in you, Master.
Obi-Wan insisted, crestfallen again.
More than I think you realize. But I also believe that the future is always in motion.
Thanks to your interference,
Qui-Gon said,
Pygel's future is written in blood.
He walked out, leaving his apprentice behind. Chapter 33.
Useless, said Pax Marifer.
He sat in the cargo hold of the Merix, which was illuminated only by the glow of the scanner blocking field. Proper procedure at the conclusion of a trip called for taking stock of all items sold and obtained. For this voyage, the profit came solely from his bargain with Zerka, which felt even more stained than it had before. Besides that, he had nothing to show for the trip other than an empty pilot's chair next to him and piles of Kolan crystals. Kolan. The whole reason they'd come to Pygel, Fool's Kyber would be a better name for it. If he'd been able to tell the difference, then the Merricks would have gone on to Gamor as planned. Instead, he had a mediocre haul of a gem that was semi-precious at best, a bunch of orange crystals that were completely useless, and no co-pilot minerals analyst. "Remain calm," he told himself. "Of course it's terribly inconvenient, but someone else can be hired, and quickly too. There are always a large number of pilots looking for work." That's what the droids who raised him would have said. Every bit of it was factual, and therefore it was a reasonable, rational way to react to the loss of his co-pilot. As he had repeatedly stated, their relationship was strictly one of business without any time-wasting deviations into friendship or just business, Pax muttered. Saying it aloud made no difference. No matter how many logical reasons he had for behaving otherwise, Pax's mind refused to quit thinking about Rahara. What was happening to her at this moment? She'd been a mine worker as a child and had hated it. Would Zerka Corporation shove her back underground? But there were worse jobs, the worst in the galaxy. And Pax knew enough of Zerka to believe they might be punitive toward a recovered escapee. Or maybe she would be sold off as a troublemaker. In that case, she could wind up anywhere doing anything. None of which was relevant to his situation or his plans. Pax wondered if maybe he was overlooking certain elements of the situation. His brain could be attempting to alert him to his faulty logic. Yes, there were always pilots seeking work, but pilots who were willing to perform illegal tasks weren't always the sort of pilots who could be trusted. Rahara was one of the exceptions. Her combination of flying skill and mineralogical knowledge was both incredibly unusual and highly valuable to him. Rahara's rarest talent of all, she'd liked him. She'd understood him in a way few others even tried to. Most sentients found him abrasive, which meant the average time of employment for all the pilots Pax had hired before Rahara was approximately 20 days. He had no desire to return to such high levels of turnover, but it seemed that he missed her as a person, and the warmth she had brought to his life even more than he'd needed her as a pilot. In his head, he could just hear B-3PO saying, "Why, that's the silliest thing I ever heard." When the derelict station had finally been boarded, more than 15 years since Pax had been stranded there as a child, the droids that raised him had been pleased.
"Just think," said G-3PO. "I'll finally be translating again. It's been ever so long."
"We will miss you."
B-3PO had tilted her blue head to study Pax for the last time.
"But now all of us can return to our proper functionality, including you. How wonderful that we've all been rescued."
The droid shuffled off, clanking down the corridor. Pax had been left there, clutching his few possessions in a bag, wondering why he wanted to cry. He felt like that again now. Rahara's presence haunted the Merricks. Her black scarf was still wrapped around the co-pilot's chair. When Pax opened the mess doors, he saw her Chandrillan tea there, waiting for her. The cargo hold still smelled faintly of that complicated floral scent Rahara had bought on Coruscant and insisted on wearing over his repeated objections.
"I believe," Pax said to himself, "that this is known as grief."
B-3PO answered in his mind,
"Well, it's not as though there's anything you can do about it. That's our lot in life."
The Merricks versus the Leverage, no. That wasn't a contest likely to end well for him. Nor did he expect Jedi Knights to help him break at least a dozen laws. So, he was helpless. But Pax remained paralyzed, unable to leave the system while there was any chance Rahara might still be in it. His comm chimed. Pax's heart leapt, for absolutely no rational reason, then plunged when he recognized the frequency. He grabbed the comm.
Sorry, we don't do business with the Jedi any longer. So you can take your comm link and...
I think we can get Rahara out, said Qui-Gon Jinn. Unofficially, that is.
Pax reviewed what he thought he'd just heard.
Let me make sure I've understood you. Are you a so-called guardian of peace and justice in the galaxy, suggesting an illegal raid?
Precisely.
He knew, without being told, that any such raid would be dangerous. Even with a Jedi on his side, the odds would be against them. He also knew that the rational thing to do was to get out of the system immediately, head to Gamorr, sell off his cargo, and start over with a new pilot. But Pax also knew, as surely as though he'd decided it long ago, that even if there was only a 1 in 2,020,407 chance of getting Rahara back, he wasn't leaving this system without her. Everyone in Pygel seemed to be referring to the day as Coronation Eve. By now, the entire palace was in an uproar of activity and celebration. Qui-Gon would have nothing to do with it. Instead, he stayed inside the palace dock. Tomorrow, the area would be crowded with private spaceships and land speeders, but today, his only companions were sentry droids. Qui-Gon lay on a levitator to get under the small craft Fanry had put at his and Obi-Wan's disposal, the one they'd flown to and from their rendezvous with Pax and Rahara. He wanted to know the thing inside and out before he finalized any plans. The ship was in sterling condition, but it wouldn't be very good at jamming signals on its own. However, with the help of the Merix's field, it might be possible for them to approach the leverage without being detected. Wait until tomorrow night. Qui-Gon slid out from under the ship to see Obi-Wan standing there.
I beg your pardon.
You shouldn't try to rescue Rahara Wick until tomorrow night, Obi-Wan said. He looked neither ashamed nor defiant, only calm. Zaka will be on high alert until the treaty ceremony is over. Afterward, though, it sounds like every Zerka high up will be attending one of the many parties. Private citizens will take their ships into orbit as part of the celebration. That makes it easier to go unnoticed, and when you get to the leverage, it ought to be all but deserted.
An excellent plan, Qui-Gon said. I'm chagrined I didn't think of it myself.
Obi-Wan ducked his head.
You've had other things on your mind.
The nightmarish scenario Qui-Gon knew would unfold at the ceremony had been replaying constantly in his head. He felt sickened every time he thought about Obi-Wan in the middle of that. Yet he knew there was nothing more he could do. The Council had made a terrible decision, and Obi-Wan would always obey the Council.
Yes, I have. And how did you know I was planning a rescue?
Because you pulled up full diagrams and schematics of the leverage this morning,
Obi-Wan said, then added, anticipating the next question.
I know that because I requested them right after you did. Your name was still listed as the last user of the terminal.
Qui-Gon couldn't help smiling.
So I'm not the only one planning a rescue.
By now, Obi-Wan had begun to relax. Some of his old humor came through as he said,
Another advantage of waiting until tomorrow night is that, after the ceremony, my schedule is entirely free.
If he's alive.
But Qui-Gon couldn't dwell on that any longer. The only way he could help Obi-Wan at this point was by attending the coronation. His foreknowledge would help him when disaster struck, and that might give him the chance to save his Padawan, Fanry, and others. It was his one hope.
Tomorrow night, then.
Qui-Gon got to his feet, wiping his greasy hands with a rag.
Thank you, Obi-Wan. I needed that clarity.
I'm glad you...
Obi-Wan stopped.
Of course you're angry with me.
but you'd always put the mission first.
Always,
Qui-Gon affirmed. It was easier to face tomorrow now that he and his apprentice had again found some common ground. If the worst should happen, at least they had been able to speak to each other with respect and kindness. One more time.
Maybe Obi-Wan's decision already changed the flow of events,
Qui-Gon thought as he listened to Obi-Wan's laughter. Maybe that will be enough to change the future. Yet he still felt the weight of foreboding, the absolute sureness that deadly trouble was coming. Obi-Wan went silent, which was when Qui-Gon heard it too. An enormous commotion outside the palace. As they turned to each other, Obi-Wan said, "What is that?" As Rael Avaros saw it, things were finally going right. Qui-Gon's Padawan had turned out to be more useful than his master. Fanry was now alight with excitement about the ceremony tomorrow, and if she'd gone rogue sending Darren up to the moon, well, okay, she'd had a point. It was just more proof that he'd done a good job teaching her. Avaros had sensed the growing determination within her. Fanry was ready to be a monarch, at least in the constitutional sense, and in less than a day, Avaros would see that crown on her head at last.
"Ready for the party, Orth?"
he called, as he walked the perimeter of the celestial chalice, curving in one giant circle.
"Gonna save me that first dance?"
Minister Orth stood on the central dais, checking the lighting or something. He expected her to snap back. Instead, she said,
"I've promised every single dance to others, Lord Regent. You'll have to ask earlier next time. However, I will allow you to bring me a drink."
With the air of someone who had made a great concession, she turned back to her work. Avaros managed not to laugh. So apparently Orth wasn't always as sour with others as she was with him.
"What's going on? What's that sound?"
Orth said, straightening her pince-nez, like that would help her hear. At first, Avaros thought it was no more than another roar from the crowd that had been mobbed outside since the ceremony's hour had finally been announced. But the noise kept building, kept coming closer.
It didn't sound happy. His hand went to the hilt of his lightsaber.
"What the hell?"
he growled as he headed for the door that led not back into the palace, but outside. The royal grounds remained green and peaceful. Whatever was going on was happening outside the wrought iron fence surrounding the palace. Avaros ran across the grounds toward the main gate, where he could see Captain Darren and his guards beginning to gather.
"Darren!" he shouted. "Any idea what the ruckus is about? We've received reports!"
Darren began, but the shouting got even louder. He shoved his scanner toward Avaros. Above it hovered a grainy hologram of Halen Azaka. Although he couldn't hear what she was saying over the din, her words appeared under her face. "As we approach this change in government, it is necessary for all voices to be heard. For all voices to be heard, we need the truth to be known. The truth about the opposition cannot be known if the palace refuses to listen. I know of only one way to make them listen."
The noise from the crowd became deafening.
Avaros looked up from the hologram to see people parting in a wave to reveal Halen Azaka herself, riding on a richly decorated mobile stage that hovered a few centimeters above the ground. She wore extravagant green robes as though she'd been invited to the coronation ball, but she kept her hands raised above her head. Beneath her hologram appeared the words, "I surrender."
Chapter 34.
When Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan received the summons to the royal chamber, Qui-Gon decided to take the long way around, which meant cutting across the palace courtyard. This would let them get a look at the crowd gathering outside to gauge its mood for themselves. The shouts and cries from the horde had reached a deafening pitch. Obi-Wan grimaced, but Qui-Gon kept his focus on the Pyjali citizens, scanning their faces. Some showed anger, but others looked worried or even hopeful. Through the Force, he could sense the swirling eddies of many different emotions. No one mood or thought dominated the crowd. Once they walked back into the palace, as soon as his ears stopped ringing, Qui-Gon said, "Apparently the people of this planet had more faith in the opposition than its leadership did."
"Agreed, Master. At least some of them did, and Azaka's actions today may convince others."
"But can they convince Rael Averroes?" The man had one day left as Lord Regent of Pyjal. Was that the best time for Halen to throw herself on his mercy, or the worst? They walked into a space they'd never been invited to before. The Lord Regent's private office. A cluttered place, as musty and run down as everything else Rael surrounded himself with. Various data solids, holo projectors, and scanners were piled so high they blocked half the light from the dusty windows. Qui-Gon wondered absently whether anything that had entered this office had ever been taken out again. But most of his attention remained focused on Halen, who sat in a chair opposite the Broad Regent's desk. She sat up straight and wore her green theatrical robes with flair. Rael, meanwhile, was pacing on the other side of the desk like a caged beast. Ironically, the revolutionary appeared more regal than the regent did.
"I don't know what kind of a stunt you're trying to pull here," Rael said, still pacing. "Showing up here, spinning your stories."
"This isn't a story."
Halen glanced back at Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. She seemed glad they were there, but she directed her words to the Lord Regent alone.
"This is truth. Verifiable truth, if you'll follow up on these leads."
She nodded toward a data pad in Captain Darren's hands, which apparently had been confiscated from her when she turned herself in. Darren glared.
"This shows us nothing," he says. "It's locked."
Halen took a deep breath.
"Master Jin can unlock it. Only Master Jin."
"What do you mean?"
Qui-Gon reached out to take the data pad. Darren handed it over with a frown.
"And what truth am I to find here?"
"After you were in the cave with us, we took your thumbprint from something you'd touched. Sorry if that's invasive, but already I knew it could come to this."
She stared down at her hands in her lap, shackled together by the binders that mocked her supposedly genteel reception in the office.
"The Regent's never treated us fairly before, and where the Regent goes, the Palace Guard follows."
"Treated you fairly?"
Rael practically snarled at her.
"What's fair for a bunch of terrorists?"
Halen ignored this.
"After we met you, Master Jin, we saw that you were impartial and committed to determining the facts of the situation. So we wanted this information to come through you and you alone."
"Taking a print is invasive, but I understand your reasoning."
Qui-Gon pressed his thumb on the identiscan. After a moment, the data pad hummed, then displayed its data. Obi-Wan, who was looking over Qui-Gon's shoulder, read more quickly.
"You think you've identified a Blackguard base here on Pyjal?"
Rael scoffed. "That's nonsense. The armed attacks have all been based from the moon, which by no coincidence is where her opposition is based."
"The armed attacks have all originated on the moon."
The admission cost Halen, Qui-Gon could see that, but she was more hopeful than afraid.
"So we never really searched the planet before. After the last attack on Zirka, though, one of my people was finally able to lock onto a Blackguard signal and follow it to the planet's surface. She used to work in holovids, you know, so she's good at that kind of thing. We were surprised, too."
"Like hell you were."
Rael was still pacing. Anyone who didn't know him as well, Qui-Gon thought, wouldn't have been able to spot these first slivers of doubt. Halen closed her eyes as though asking for patience.
"What we found is a heavily armed installation. Since we're a theater troupe..."
Halen ignored Rael's snarl.
"Obviously we don't have the skills or the firepower to check this out ourselves. Instead, I brought it to you.
All I ask is that you investigate this base thoroughly on your own terms.
We will, Qui-Gon said, with or without the help of royal officials, though I'd prefer you were with us, Rael.
Darren looked back and forth between the two men.
Lord Regent, your orders.
Finally, Rael stopped pacing. He took a deep breath.
We've got nothing to lose. Let's go.
Their craft swept along the coastline with sand on one side and sea on the other.
On a boundary, Avaros thought. Towing the line, like I always am.
During his 8 years as Lord Regent of Pygel, he'd begun to feel as though he'd carved out a place for himself for the first time in his life. This was a place that understood how a rough exterior could conceal a worthy interior. A place where his raw feelings about Nim's death could serve a worthwhile purpose. His place. Avaros trusted himself on Pygel, and he'd never thought he would trust himself again after the Advent Mutiny. But if he'd been wrong about the opposition, if he'd put royal guards in danger, put Fanry in danger.
Coming into range, said Qui-Gon.
He stood beside Avaros in the craft, both of them holding on to anchor straps as they were buffeted by winds from the open sides. The scanner Qui-Gon held in his other hand blinked rapidly, white, red, white, signaling their prey.
All right, Darren, take us in,
Avaros called. Captain Darren responded only by bringing the craft down. A few hundred meters from the ocean, dugout trenches began to appear, then stonework, then a familiar octagonal shape.
A celestial watchtower,
Avaros muttered. He didn't realize he'd spoken out loud until Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan turned to him, curious.
It's an ancient fort, built to watch over the Soul craft back in the days when spaceflight was a lot more dangerous. Most of them are ruins now. Looks like this one was too. Until somebody decided to renovate.
Ground craft, surface-to-air weapons, laser cannons, top-of-the-line droidicas. This was a serious military installation. Beyond anything the opposition had ever possessed, so far as Avaros knew. Yet there were no signs of life. No paramilitary troops returning fire, no guards hurrying to evacuate leaders. The place was both armed to the death and completely deserted.
Lord Regent! Darren shouted. Stealth shield generators!
The craft banked right so sharply that even the Jedi scrambled to stay on their feet. Although the other staffed ships did the same, a seeker droid took the curve at too rounded an angle and flew over the invisible barrier to the watchtower, which promptly became visible as in a fiery orange wall of energy the moment the droid struck it and then exploded. Soot curled into the air as the droid shell went into a spiral, then crashed onto the stone wall. Avaros cursed.
A trap! The damn opposition led us into a trap! Someone did,
Qui-Gon said.
But not the opposition. Look! Does this seem within the means of a small political group on your moon?
Qui-Gon pointed at the things Avaros had noted for himself. The pricey droidica, the sophisticated armaments. This wasn't the kind of junk ex-performance artists had on hand. Darren wasn't convinced.
We have no idea who else might be funding the Blackguards. Plenty of forces in the galaxy would have good reason to interfere with the hyperspace corridor. Forces that would have no compunction about funneling money and arms to terrorists.
It would be so easy to agree with Darren, but Avaros couldn't. The truth had finally become clear to him, and he wouldn't deny it.
So this trap, Avaros said, you think it was set for us or for the opposition?
Basically, he was admitting he'd been wrong. Some people wouldn't have been able to resist the urge to rub it in. Qui-Gon was better than that.
I'm not sure. Can we destroy the stealth generators and investigate? Let's do it!
Avaros didn't know what else to think, but he was ready to blow some stuff up. Although Captain Darren feared more traps and argued strongly against landing, several targeted scans convinced Qui-Gon it was safe to enter the watchtower. No further probes had stirred up additional defensive measures. When their craft touched down, Avaros jumped off immediately, stalking across the grounds to what looked like the central structure, at least in antiquity. Light rain began to patter down as everyone else began exploring the site.
Scans or no scans, we should operate at a high level of caution,
Captain Darren ordered as his troops began to fan out.
In other words, when in doubt, blow it up.
And if it's useful evidence? Qui-Gon kept the question to himself. They'd already gleaned the most valuable fact this site had to offer. Confirmation that the opposition wasn't behind the Blackguard attacks, and Darren was protecting his men.
There's almost too much to investigate, said Obi-Wan as he gestured at the various buildings and equipment around them. Where do we start?
Qui-Gon considered. We look for comm devices. Past messages, channels of contact. It looks as though the Blackguards abandoned this place in a hurry. Otherwise, they'd never have left so much behind. If they failed to wipe any communication logs, those may lead us to whoever's behind this. Unfortunately, it appeared the Blackguards had recognized that danger. Every main building, every large craft had its comm logs completely wiped. When Obi-Wan managed to pull up some records from a deactivated astromech, they were hopeful, but it turned out to contain very little information.
This doesn't have anything that leads to Pygel or its moon, Obi-Wan said, shoulders drooping. Only messages to and from other systems, and very few of those.
Qui-Gon scanned the datapad plugged into the astromech. Corellia, probably a straightforward purchase of vessels or weaponry. Scipio, since the intergalactic banking clan was based there, this meant money laundering. Zerka Corporation funneled a lot of its money through Scipio, but so did every other large company in the galaxy, as well as several monarchies, so the link proved nothing. And also,
Teth, he said. Why would the Blackguards be in touch with anyone on Teth?
Obi-Wan's surprise was the equal of Qui-Gon's own. The Blackguards couldn't be working for the Hutts. Could they? For a moment, it seemed all too plausible. The Hutts would no doubt love to slither into power on the planet that would anchor a major hyperspace corridor. But in that case, there are records of only two communications between Pygel and Teth. Qui-Gon said, if the Hutts were behind this, there would be much more, and the data wouldn't be stored in a low-security droid.
That makes sense, Obi-Wan agreed, though he was frowning. Still, if the Blackguards were in touch with the Hutts at all, that can't be good.
Although Qui-Gon's gut told him the Hutts didn't lead to the answers they sought, he was as curious as his apprentice about what this meant. A few clicks with his finger linked the droid to Teth again. Let's call and find out. It took a few minutes for a live connection to be established. Qui-Gon settled himself on the ground within the droid's hollow range, so he'd look at whoever answered face to face. To his displeasure, but not entirely his surprise, the figure that took shape was familiar.
Jedi Jin.
Thurible had to have been astonished, but he displayed no sign of it.
I had hoped we would speak again someday.
No doubt you didn't expect it to be today,
Qui-Gon said, or on this channel.
Perhaps you could tell me why you're in touch with a terrorist organization on the planet Pygel.
Thurible did look surprised now. The man had to be an accomplished actor.
Terrorist organization? Certainly not. My employer would never condone such actions. We were planning to do business with the legitimate government of Pygel. Or, I must admit, Perhaps only individuals who claim to represent the government of Pygel. There are so many dishonest people in the worlds.
Indeed there were.
Qui-Gon came close to saying so, before it occurred to him, what if the person who'd spoken to Thurible was part of the government? Someone close to the princess.